This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. The earthquake of 2010 was a devastating economic and political setback for Haiti. But the country's troubles were only exacerbated by that natural disaster, not created by it. To understand why Haiti has been in bad shape for so long, we have to go back to the very beginning. That's something Duke Professor Lorraine Dubois has done in his new book, Haiti, The Aftershocks of History. Modern Haiti was born of a slave revolt in 1804. It was modeled in many ways on the American and French revolutions. But European and American observers were horrified to see that the principles of equality, fraternity, and liberty applied to their African property. The newly independent country was met with hostility, subjected to repeated attempts at recolonialization and occupation. Meanwhile, internal dissent and dictatorship have further impaired Haitian progress. Joining us in the studio now is Lorraine Dubois. He's a professor of history and romance studies at Duke University and co-director of the Haiti Lab at the Franklin Humanities Institute at Duke. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So take us back. Haiti's problems go back to its slave roots. What should have been the moment of great liberation and exaltation turns out to be the kind of genesis of many of its problems in the modern age.
Absolutely. Well, the revolution is a triumph because it does overthrow slavery and creates this new nation. But at the same time, it sets up a number of new problems, and both the hostility with which the revolution is received abroad and then the deep kind of confrontation and struggle within Haiti to define freedom also becomes the basis for a long set of struggles.
Tell us more about the hostility it met. Why?
Well, in a sense, this was a world in which slavery dominated the economic order, the political order in the United States, all over the place. So Haiti was a kind of island in the midst of this world of slavery. So to have a successful model of violent slave revolution in the midst of that was obviously a challenge.
The U.S. Resisted and tried actually to overturn that revolution.
Well, there was a resistance and a kind of isolation to it. Although, you know, the United States had a double policy. They traded a lot with Haiti but refused to recognize its independence. The occupation came later in the 19th century, beginning of U.S. interest, and then a 20-year occupation in the 20th century.
The French, of course, tried to recolonize, failed, and then recognized Haiti but at a cost.
Mm-hmm. Right. In 1825, they recognized Haiti but levied an indemnity, a very large indemnity that the Haitian government had to pay.
And this, of course, made it very difficult to create economic stability in debt to Haiti to the French for a long time. And at the same time, democracy as we know it and understand it really didn't take hold, whether it wasn't just because the French were trying to recolonize or impose this debt, right?
Well, sure. There was a division, a deep division within the country. And a lot of leaders believed that the plantation model was really the only model Haiti could succeed. But there was deep resistance to that among a population of ex-slaves.
So talk about the system that when you talk about the resistance, what would have been the alternative to the plantation system?
Well, I developed the idea. It's an idea of Jean Casimir, who's a Haitian sociologist, coined the term the counter-plantation system to describe a kind of order that was all about refusing the plantation, resisting the return of the plantation, and creating an alternative to it.
And what would that alternative have looked like?
Though the alternative was essentially to create a system of smaller farms that still exported crops, especially coffee, but also really sustained a kind of internal economy of food for the population.
So this would be kind of a sustainable agriculture, although there was an export component. So it wasn't just subsistence farming that we're talking about.
Absolutely.
Did it ever take hold? Was there ever any form of that kind of system?
Absolutely. I mean, what I really argue in the book is that in the 19th century, that system guaranteed a quite a good quality of life for Haitians. In fact, a symbol of that is that this is a country that drew a lot of migrants, including from the United States. It was not a place people left. It's a place people actually moved to.
And so it was working. What about the government? What kind of political order was there when these relatively good economic times were taking place?
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a conflict in the sense that the government became actually, I argue, had a kind of stalemate with the population. They couldn't really control or resist some of these movements, but it became a site of continual contestation. So there's a lot of fighting over power and overthrowing of different regimes in this time, but also regional governments in power, which have a different kind of history.
And the social structure is probably something important to understand, the fact that sort of who made up the Haitian population, who were the ruling elite and who were the the enslaved people who had then become free.
Mm-hmm. Well, that one of the kind of most damaging issues that things in Haiti has been there's a tight link, a long tight link going back to the revolution between the military and the government, and a kind of very militarized government, which tended towards authoritarian power throughout, which has been a serious problem.
And that government and the military represented a fraction, a small fraction of the population.
Mm-hmm. It was something that different members of the population could move into, but it was always a kind of – the power was condensed in a small group.
How important was it that much of the population, the enslaved population, were recently taken from Africa there mm-hmm. because of the replacement policy on that island? Mm-hmm. Explain how that worked and how it might be different from what we might see in the United States.
Right. I mean, there were more slaves, first of all, imported to Haiti than ever to the United States, up to a million, so about a tenth of the whole slave trade. And at the time of independence, the majority of people in that country had been born and raised in Africa. So from a cultural standpoint, it's extremely different and extremely important to understand.
Who was behind the revolution? How popular was it? How much popular support did it have?
Mm-hmm. It really was a deeply popular revolution. I mean, it emerged from the slaves on the plantations. The leaders, many of them were ex-slaves. Some were also people who had been free before the revolution. But it mobilized massively the population. So Haiti's roots are in this very democratic movement.
Roots in the democratic movement, but fair to say that most of its history was, at least its modern history, under the rule of a totalitarian dictatorships.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a variety, actually. There has been a parliamentary system in Haiti since the early 19th century, and at times that parliament has been a site of kind of opposition politics. There have been repeated generation after generation these democratic movements, but have not been able to really create a truly democratic state most of the time.
Now, in the early part of the 20th century, we see the American occupation of Haiti. Explain mm-hmm. the background and tell us a little bit more about that occupation.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the late 19th century, the U.S. begins to be very interested in Haiti. Haiti and Cuba occupy this little peninsula that if boats have to travel to go to the Panama Canal. So there's a geopolitical interest. And that leads to increasing interest that ultimately culminates in 1915 in this occupation.
Talk about that occupation. What was the impetus behind it? What was the trigger?
Well, the justification was actually World War One, and the presence of Germans in Haiti. But the real driver was essentially both strategic and economic, a desire to have military control there, but also to rebuild plantations and to have kind of investments in agriculture.
And how did that work? We send in the Marines, and they were the actual occupation force and the administrators.
Absolutely. I mean, the country was directly run by the U.S. Marine Corps with Marines in different districts. And the U.S. rewrote the Haitian Constitution, essentially kind of took over the governance for fully 20 years.
And, of course, with not much understanding of Haitian culture, language, any of the things that you might think would be useful mm-hmm. if you're going to administer.
Yeah, and part of the big central story in this book is the story of that occupation and all the effects that it had in Haiti. And there was definitely misunderstanding. Actually, many Haitian leaders were sympathetic and even collaborated with the occupation at first, but that changed quite radically over time.
So? Why would they be sympathetic?
There was, I think, a set of people who thought that the U.S. could help modernize and improve the country and actually believed in that project and worked with the U.S. at first to do so.
By and large, then, what was the impact and what was the reception of American troops by most of the Haitian people?
I mean, ultimately, the reception at first was there wasn't that much resistance, but relatively quickly, U.S. policies, including using forced labor to build roads, which reminded people of slavery, expropriation of land in the countryside, set off violent insurrection. And there ended up being a very, very intense war by 1918, 1919.
And so at that point, once you spilled American blood, of course, that becomes your justification for whatever else. This also, interestingly enough, became one of the first examples of U.S. bombardment of enemy forces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in 1919, the U.S. begins to use aerial bombardment of these kind of rural guerrilla units and the towns that they've kind of created. So it's a pretty horrifying part of the story.
Were they targeted? Were there civilian populations that were hurt by this, or were they fairly closely targeted?
No, there were really civilian populations as well, because the insurgent movements, it was a kind of insurgency in the countryside, and many of the insurgent camps were effectively little towns and villages as well.
So the impact then on Haitian imagination and the idea of Americans from that point forward may have been profound.
Yeah, it's quite profound. It's one of the things I tried to deal with in the book is that, I mean, Americans, I think, barely know about that history, but every Haitian knows well that history and remembers it, and people have grandparents who lived through it. So it's pretty important for us to know that.
How effective was the military resistance?
The military resistance ultimately failed and was crushed by the U.S., although in a sense, by the time that war had ended, much of the Haitian population had turned against the occupation or was beginning to.
So in the aftermath, then, what kind of governance do we see? What sort of rule of law follows the American pullout?
In 1934, the U.S. leaves, and then you get a series of kind of troubled regimes in which the U.S. is still very present, actually. And there's a 20-year period of different regimes, different struggles that ultimately then culminate in 1956 and the rise of Duvalier, the Duvalier dictatorship.
How is the U.S. present?
The U.S. continued to be present, actually directly controlling finances. They still had Marines on the ground. So it was a pullout, but in many ways, the U.S. occupation sort of continued after 1934 in crucial ways.
Trying to influence elections and who might be in charge?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the beginning. The occupation then continued political influence, but also a lot of control over financial matters as well.
And what was the U.S. relationship, the financial and trade relationship with Haiti at that time?
Again, there was an attempt to build these new trade relationships with Haiti, and there were lots of – even here in Durham, there were companies that tried to invest in coffee. So there's these positive directions of investment. But the political situation continued to be one of intense conflict in those years.
When we talk about the United States to U.S. policy, what about the response of African-American leadership and communities to what was happening in Haiti? Let's go back to the occupation itself. Mm-hmm. Back in the
Yeah, there's a long tradition of African-American involvement in Haiti, and we see that in Durham with the Haiti neighborhood. And many of those characters are in the book. James Theodore Holly, an African-American who founded the Haitian Episcopal Church, Frederick Douglass, who was an ambassador to Haiti, and then James Weldon Johnson, who was a big critic of the U.S. occupation from within the U.S.
Interestingly enough, both Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois supported the mm-hmm. American occupation initially.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of contradictions about African-American attitudes towards Haiti that up to this day, in fact.
And the support was based on their sense that this might uplift.
Exactly. And over time, I think they became more critical. But many people in the U.S., I think, were not that aware of what was going on. It's one of these occupations that began and ultimately developed into something I think no one really expected on either side.
Was there any response? Was it ever part of the American imagination or the political debate, the U.S. occupation of Haiti back in those years?
What happened was that it created a real huge cultural impact. So this is the moment when like the zombie film gets born, when there's a lot of representations of Haiti. In place of, I guess, a historical engagement with really what happened during that country, we got a load of stereotypes is what I would describe it, part of our kind of unconscious that remains to this day.
So then we have the Duvalier regimes, Papa Doc and Baby Doc. Talk about the Haiti under those regimes.
Well, that was a very incredibly harmful regime. I mean, a 30-year totalitarian regime that really destroyed a lot of institutions in Haiti. Economically did not provide an advantage. In fact, things declined during that period. And all of it was supported from the U.S. side because of the Cold War policies of the time as a counterpoint to Cuba.
Fiercely anti-communist, so it doesn't matter what you're doing to your people as long as you're anti-communist. That was American policy.
Right.
David Gurr, it's carried out in – there is a popular rebellion. It is led by a man named Jean-Bertrand Aristide. And he becomes the kind of post-Duvalier, the first leader of that country. There's a new constitution.
Right.
Things
right.
look like they're going to go pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of hope at the end of the Duvalier regime. But one of the things to show in the book is that a number of things happened during that regime: the creation of a massive diaspora, the increasing routing of aid through NGO organizations, a lot of structural things that, in a sense, are still kind of haunting the post-Duvalier landscape.
Including Aristide, then is forced to flee. There's a coup attempt in 2004. Before that, the initial coup.
Well, he suffered two coups, right? So he was elected and then overthrown very quickly by a military coup from the remnants of the old regime, eventually brought back by U.S. troops and under order by Bill Clinton in 1994. And then 10 years later, after a long political process, ends up getting removed again in a context of a coup.
That first time back, he is escorted back, but there are neoliberal structural changes now. Haiti is forced to remove all of its tariffs, all of its protections in order to get the economy going again, loans from Western countries.
Right. Absolutely. There's a big economic push to kind of in the kind of orthodoxies of that moment, the neoliberal orthodoxies, which I think most people recognize really had an incredibly damaging impact in Haiti, including Bill Clinton, who was the author of some of those policies, has kind of now apologized for them.
Because now they're importing food that they used to grow.
Exactly.
Because they can't. It's just cheaper not to do that. So all of this happens. Aristide then the second time was escorted out by U.S. troops. He claims he was kidnapped.
Right.
He was trying to resist this – totalitarian reoccupation of his country by his own. And what do you think? What did happen there? Mm-hmm.
It's like one of the more polarizing issues, of course, in Haiti today. And you hear very, very, very many different stories about it. There's no doubt that by 2004, Aristide had lost a lot of supporters who had been with him before. The reasons for that are still up for great debate because he was both enemies within and outside, and then his own choices. And you find that's still going on, and that debate will go on for a long time.
I want to read to you from a review in The Economist about your book, and it talks about this communitarian form of sort of anti-plantation economy. And it says, but unfortunately specialized – so the suggestion that subsistence culture could be part of the answer for Haiti's stability. And the review says, but unfortunately specialized wage labor for global market is the most effective means yet devised for lifting masses out of poverty. This is The Economist now. As he refuses to recognize it, Mr. Dubois has demonstrated the central irony of Haitian history. The country's birth in a heroic slave revolt has made citizens uneasy with the economic system most likely to alleviate their misery. Should mm-hmm. they just knuckle under? Let's get part of the globalized train here and right. drive away?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what the reviewer suggests. I would suggest that hopefully the book suggests that that's really not the best option. And I think that what's fascinating about Haitian history is that it forces us to kind of think differently and maybe challenge some of our
Why
orthodoxies.
Not? You know, let's liberalize, get these corporations mm-hmm. in there and build some jobs
right.
for the Haitian people.
I mean, no doubt it would be great to have more jobs. But I think without a strong agricultural foundation and a really rethinking of a kind of sustainable system within the country, none of those other things will really be able to take root. And that's the essential challenge in the 21st century.
Lorraine Dubois, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks.
Lorraine Dubois is professor of history and romance studies at Duke University, co-director of the Haiti Lab at the Franklin Humanities Institute at Duke. His new book is called Haiti, The Aftershocks of History. That's our program for today. Thanks for listening. Our website is stateofthings.org. You can find a link to calendar events mentioned on the show. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.